Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome back to Nagler's Never Right. OTAs have kicked off. Two of them are in the books as I record this. The first public one happening on Tuesday afternoon. Lots to get to. Let's dive in. First of all, with, I guess, housekeeping in the sense of getting up to date on injuries. Quentin Rollins revealing to our Michael Cohen that he also had to go and have groin surgery, much like Demarius Randle did in season last year. He actually saw the same surgeon. And I tell you what, that maybe doesn't quote-unquote explain a lot, but it definitely puts his season into a different context. I've been going back and watching a lot of the tape from last year. I'm kind of slowly making my way through the first month right now. And according to Michael's reporting, this is something, and something that, you know, Quentin Rollins said, this is something that has been plaguing him since October. And there's no way you can kind of turn on his tape now and not think about the fact that he was dealing with a groin injury for a good part of the year. Obviously, you're on the field, you're between the white lines, you are judged by what you put on tape. That will never change in the NFL, but that does give you a little bit more context for a season that, let's face it, was a profound disappointment if you're looking at it from a Packers point of view. Quentin Rollins was expected to help solidify a defensive backfield. Instead, he became a major liability for a good part of the season. Now we know that he was dealing with a groin injury. So that is definitely something to watch for as the offseason continues. He apparently, you know, has had the surgery. Everything is great. He says he's in tip-top shape. He was out there yesterday, did everything asked of him. So that is something that, you know, in this great morass of bodies that the defensive backfield has become for the Packers as they're trying to sort things out. Rollins is probably someone who's been forgotten a little bit, kind of the odd man out in discussions when people are talking about how things will shake out in the secondary. I'm very curious to see how he bounces back in light of this news. Another injury to talk about would be Corey Linsley recovering from ankle surgery that he had after the season. He was able to do some initial drill work on Tuesday, but did not participate in most of the teamwork. And, you know, this is something, you know, obviously it's smart. They're going to take it slow with him, and that makes a ton of sense. With the the loss of J.C. Treader really puts them in a precarious position. Don Barclay was your starting center on Tuesday, snapping the ball to Aaron Rodgers. And in no way, shape, or form do the Packers ever want to see that during the 2017 season. They got really lucky with the depth that they had between Linsley and J.C. Treader for a number of years. Obviously, everyone knows how the position kind of, you know, went back and forth between the two because of injury. Corey Linsley staying on the field is going to be vitally important in a way it hasn't been the last couple years. So that is definitely going to be something to watch for. And the other thing coming into the 2017 season in regards to Linsley, obviously, is the contract situation. He is entering the last year of his rookie deal. You have to think he's in line for an extension when the Packers cut Josh Sitton. You know, one of the reasons was, that was given that caused Josh Sitton to be unhappy was the Packers wanted to concentrate on their younger guys. And David Bakhtiari was obviously the first in line. He got his deal right before the season. Now you have to think Corey Linsley will be next in line. And I do wonder if allowing J.C. Treader to walk will come back and bite this team in 2017. Obviously, you have to think Treader wanted to get to the open market. He knew he was valuable. He knew he was going to get paid. I'm sure his representatives knew that. And Cleveland absolutely did pay him. But I do wonder if that at some point comes back to bite them. He was a talented young player, and it's not like Thompson generally to let those guys out the door. But you can't pay everybody, and they made the determination that they wanted to obviously spend money in other places and or save that cap space, which I thought Zach over at Cheesehead TV made a really good point. At this point last year, the Packers were hovering around $10 million in cap space. And as it stands right now, at the start of OTAs, they're hovering around $18 million in cap space. That's quite a significant increase. And I know that they've got to keep space open for Aaron Rodgers and his eventual deal, his eventual extension. I would tend to think that that wouldn't happen until next year, but of course they can roll over whatever non-used cap space they have into next season. But $18 million just sitting there, that's a significant chunk that they've kept open, and it will be interesting to see how that gets allocated in the remaining months. So I don't have a guest today, but I do have I did solicit questions on Twitter, and holy cow, did you people come through? So let me just dive in here. That's quite a deluge, so to speak, from my Twitter following. So I'm just going to pick a few at random here and go with that. Let's see. Matthew asks, do the Packers keep six wide receivers? Which ones do they cut? How many different positions will Josh Jones play? There's a lot of questions at once, Matthew. Do all three rookie running backs make the team? See, you're trying to get your money's worth here with all these questions in one tweet, and I'm impressed. I'll just go in order here. Do they keep six wide receivers? It's possible if wide receivers five and six are tearing it up on special teams, because that is the way that those lower-level guys are going to make this squad. You're going to have to. And the lower-level guys, including not only the rookies, but also a guy like Jeff Janis, whoever those guys are, they're at the bottom of the depth chart, are going to have to be significant contributors on special teams. How many different positions will Josh Jones play? Well, right now it looks like two at least, safety and inside linebacker. Now, obviously, that's a major simplification, but that is kind of the early read here. And do all three rookie running backs make the team? It's going to be tough. It's going to be tough, I got to admit. If you think they're going to keep, most likely, obviously, they got Ty Montgomery and Aaron Ripkowski on the squad. They keep two more running backs, most likely, and another fullback, maybe. I don't see all three rookie running backs. That is going to be quite the task. Right now, I would say no, but you know, obviously, injuries will go a long way to kind of sorting that out. It happens every summer. So, you know, watch that space. Let's see what else we got here. Nick asks, do you expect any contract signings between now and the start of 2017 campaign? Nick, I did just touch on that just a little bit with Corey Linsley. I think Linsley is the kind of leader in the clubhouse, so to speak. Haha, Clinton Dix is obviously probably in line, but with the fifth-year option being activated, they can afford to wait there. And as far as Davante Adams goes, you know, he... It's interesting because we all know about the struggles he had in 2015 and the major bounce back he had last year in 2016. I tend to think the Packers will want to see him for another full season before committing to him long term. And with that, I think, you know, the closer you get as a player to the open market, the more you want to dip your toe in there because you want to see. And you look at the contracts that are handed out in free agency, coupled with the fact that the salary cap just continues to go up, it continues to escalate, it continues to grow roughly $10 to $12 million per year. You know, there's money. There is a lot of money out there. And if you are a young guy coming up on your first kind of post-rookie deal contract, you can get paid. You can get paid big time. And at a position like wide receiver, which is kind of so... I mean, there's so many spots. People running two, three, four, five wide receiver sets now, week in and week out, you can't have enough good ones. And if you are a good one, and Davante Adams certainly looks like he's on his way to being, you're going to get paid. So I think the Packers, just looking at their MO the last couple years, I would not be surprised if they like I said, they let it play out this year and then came in with some kind of for the rest of the market, a low offer to try and get Adams to bite. And then it's going to be down to Adams deciding whether he wants to stick around in Green Bay or whether he wants to go test the market and get, you know, some big time contract. You know, let's face it. You look at guys like David Bakhtiari or Mike Daniels, two guys who signed their deals early and you look at the following year in free agency, what players at their positions got in on the open market, I don't think any honest observer would say that they got way below market deals and very favorable deals for the Packers. That's how Green Bay has operated under Ted Thompson. You know, they make sure that they're not overpaying. They almost always get a bargain. They almost always get a deal. And, you know, while the players are given the security of a long-term contract and some serious money up front, you know, it pales in comparison to what most guys are getting on the open market. And that is going to be kind of, I tend to think, that is going to, be what Davante Adams and his representatives are going to have to weigh, because the Packers aren't going to break the bank, especially prior to giving out Aaron Rodgers' extensions. So that's one to monitor, most certainly. Let's see what else we got here. Wisco Dad, he asks, thoughts on Ted bringing in free agent linebackers still, some seemingly decent ones out there. Yeah, I would agree that there are, you know, if you look at anyone from, we got DeAndre Levy still out there, Elvis Dumervil is still out there. My thing, I've said it kind of repeatedly, I've been asked about it on Facebook Live, I'll reiterate it here. I tend to think they're going to wait and see what they have. They'll look at, what they have on hand as far as athleticism and scheme fit, etc. And then, you know, obviously the Vince Beagle injury is something to monitor because, he's obviously not practicing, and that'll give more reps to younger guys or guys like Jayrone Elliott, who are going to be seeing increased snaps. But I tend to think they'll be deliberate. They'll sit and wait and see. I have no doubt that they're looking at some of those guys, those veteran free agents. In fact, I know for a fact that they are, that they've looked at their tape. And, you know, whether a move is imminent or not, I don't know. But I would tend to doubt anything happens soon. Maybe after they get through minicamp and they reassess their roster and they think, okay, we probably need some help here or here, then maybe a call gets made. But again, I really don't think that, especially at inside linebacker, I don't think they think that they're in any danger at all. I don't think they see that as a problem area. Between what they have in Martinez and Ryan and Thomas, especially on early downs, but Thomas, you know, clearly is kind of the designated dime back or a dime backer. I think their thinking is we're fine on early downs with those guys. And then, in obvious passing situations, we're going to kick down Morgan Burnett. Josh Jones is obviously going to be kind of roaming all over the place, whether it's linebacker or safety. And those guys are going to be the interior, basically. So I don't think they see inside linebacker as an issue. Now, maybe, like I said, they look at outside linebacker and they think, okay, we're a little light here. Maybe we need some help. And then maybe a call to someone like Elvis Dumervil or Mario Williams gets made. But again, as always, the MO under Ted Thompson will be to be deliberate and to kind of exhaust every possibility that's already on the roster. So that's a long way of saying maybe, Wisco Dad. Daniel asks, how many carries per game do you estimate for Montgomery? How many total touches? Daniel, this sounds suspiciously like a fantasy football question, but I will answer it anyway. How many carries per game do I estimate for Montgomery? I'd say, and I know people may balk at this, but I would say I'd be surprised if it's ever close to 15. I think it's going to be always around, much more around like 12, 13 carries per game. The reason being, Rodgers and McCarthy, they're pass happy. And I do think that a lot of times maybe a run play will be called or they'll have an RPO, a run pass option on, and Rodgers will choose to throw and or adjust at the line of scrimmage. I think they're going to rotate a lot. I think, Montgomery may be the nominal, quote-unquote starter, but I think Jamal Williams, Aaron Jones, I think these guys are going to get plenty of looks. And obviously we'd have to see how things shake out throughout camp to see if any of these guys can play. But I just don't ever see him becoming a true big-time workhorse back, although that's kind of the way of the NFL, too. That's just not something that happens much in the league these days. I would hover around 12 to maybe 15 on a very busy day for Ty. Let's see what else we got here. Patty asks, how big of an improvement in the secondary do you expect to see with the free agent signings / improved health / draft picks? Great question, Patty. I expect to see significant improvement, actually. I think between Kevin King and Devon House, they've gone a long way to solidifying the perimeter, which is what really gave them tons of trouble last year, especially in third down situations. Now, I'm not saying they're magically going to, you know, morph into some lockdown Midwest version of the Legion of Doom, but I do believe that they have gone a long way in papering over a lot of the cracks that gave them issues last year. Josh asks, do you see Jamal Williams becoming running back one anytime this season? It's a possibility, Josh. I don't expect it to happen. I tend to think he'll be much more in the role that we saw from James Starks a couple years ago, in 2015 specifically, when you know you had the kind of the 1-2 punch. And obviously in that year, eventually Starks had to take over because of the issues surrounding Eddie Lacy. But at the beginning of that year, you know, you had Eddie as your solidified number one, and Starks was very much there to kind of be a change of pace slash spell the starter. I think that's Jamal Williams' role, especially his rookie year. Funnily enough, the more you watch his tape, the more he looks like James Starks. Really upright runner, a guy who does a good job of recognizing where the wash is going in front of him and being able to put his foot in the ground and get upfield, kind of a one-cut-and-go guy. I tend to think that's how they'll use him. He'll be kind of a change-up, so to speak. But now, you know, I say that, and he could hit the ground running, come into camp and just tear it up, and maybe it becomes impossible to keep him off the field. We can only let that play out. But initially, that's, you know, looking at his tape, that's kind of how I see it, envision him his rookie year. Curtis asks, what do you expect from Trevor Davis? He disappeared last year, and we brought in two new receivers for this year. Was he a dud? Curtis, way too early to call him a dud, a bust, or any of those words. You know, he had his muff punt in Tennessee and then was banished pretty much for the rest of the season. But if you go back and you watch the limited kind of amount of, you know, reps he got and the action he got, especially the first Atlanta game, he showed real promise. Now, he's got to contribute on special teams. There's no doubt about that. As I was saying earlier, if he's going to be one of those, you know, lower rung guys in the wide receiver depth chart, which you would figure he projects to be, he absolutely is going to have to tear it up on special teams. Now, that said, I think he's got great potential. And I'm very curious to see what he looks like when the pads go on and, you know, if he's able to kind of turn some heads. Because, look, last year, coming into the season, the knock was, you know, he was really kind of, he was a thinner guy. He needed to put on weight. He needed to add some muscle. And, you know, this offseason time is for. And as the year went on, he got much better, especially if you compared it to where he was in camp last year. Towards the end of the year, he got much better at the line of scrimmage, getting off of jams, working defensive backs initially with his first kind of sudden burst off the line. He really improved in that regard. And if he can continue that development, he's got a real shot. But there's no, as you're saying here, there's no question that, you know, they drafted two new receivers. There's a lot of competition at that position, and he's going to have to do everything in his power to kind of stand out and turn some heads day in and day out to really make a name for himself to stick around. Because, look, you're always getting better, you're always getting worse, and you're either part of the problem or you're part of the solution. And the best way for him to be part of the solution is to tear it up on special teams and really kind of continue to exhibit improvement as he did throughout last season. Oh, I think Raj has my favorite question of the day. If Aaron Rodgers was a beverage, what type of beverage would he be? Raj, he's got to be something crystal clear and smooth. So whatever that would be for you. Who do you see starting in the secondary for the defensive nickel and dime packages? Asks Ryan. Good question. I tend to think it'll be King and House on the outside, on the perimeter. And then we'll see if it's, you know, a traditional dime look. They'll most likely have Thomas as the dime backer, and then most likely Bryce and HaHa Clinton Dix as safeties, and then Burnett and probably Demaryius Randall in the slots. So that's just an initial kind of thought, but you know, that could change, obviously. Tony asking, can you see a dime alignment in which Burnett and Jones play the inside linebacker spots? Absolutely, Tony. I don't think there's any question that that is going to be part of the makeup this year. And now, obviously, it's going to change week to week, game plan to game plan. very much dependent on matchups. You saw last year a lot of times Burnett's role was really dependent on who they were facing as a tight end, whether it was Jimmy Graham or Jason Witten. They used him a lot in that role to try and kind of mitigate and kind of limit what they were asking Micah Hyde to do against tight ends, because let's face it, Micah Hyde was destroyed repeatedly by tight ends, both good and bad, throughout his career. So I think, you know, Jones and Burnett will play. Those are the real chess pieces for Dom Capers. Let's see. Gosh, so many questions, guys. I'm so impressed. Who would you rather have start, asks Mike. King or Randall? Well, Mike, that's an impossible question to answer until I see King on the field and Randall practicing fully healthy. I will be in Green Bay probably right at the same time King arrives, after he, you know, he's not allowed to practice because his school is on the semester quarter system. So he is not allowed, you know, to be with the Packers until, I guess it's early June. So he'll should be there at minicamp, and I'll be there at minicamp. So ask me that question again after I've seen both of these guys on the field, at least for a little bit. Let's see. Really interesting question from Matt. You're a defensive coordinator. What do you do to stop / slow down Aaron Rodgers? Rush or cover? Pick your poison. It's like choosing how you want to die. Matt, I tell you what, it is a pick your poison, but traditionally, almost, you know, to a man, most defensive coordinators will tell you, and this is, you know, this is the age old kind of defensive philosophy when having to defend superstar quarterbacks, is you want to play coverage. You want to play coverage because they've seen every blitz, they've seen every possible version of pressure, and they know how to beat it. And Aaron Rodgers last year, per Pro Football Focus, was the best in the league at beating pressure. So I got to choose coverage. Now, you're going to sit there and maybe bleed to death, you know, as he picks you apart going, you know, 12, 13, 14 play drives. But as Tony Dungy used to say, you know, the chances that they make a mistake are much greater on a 12 play drive than, you know, your chances of getting to the quarterback if you call a heavy blitz pressure and then, you know, homeboy recognizes it and just torches you in one play. So, yeah, if I had to pick that poison, that would have to be coverage every time. Ooh, interesting question here. Does the versatility of Ty Montgomery end up affecting the wide receiver room in the form of cuts? It's possible. It's very possible. I do tend to think, you know, they've committed to him as running back, and while his kind of versatility obviously gives them lots of options, you know, it's definitely going to be in the conversation. There's no doubt about that. When all the personnel staff is sitting around with the coaching staff and they're arguing over who stays and who goes there during the, now it's not just final cutdown, but the only cutdown, after the NFL yesterday voted to eliminate the cutdown from 90 to 75. Now it is straight from 90 to 53 after the final preseason game. When they're just sitting around arguing, one of the things they're going to talk about is, yeah, look, we don't need to keep this extra wide receiver. We've got Ty. Now, I would say Ty's propensity for injury and his seeming inability to stay on the field down in and down out while he was a running back last year may give them pause in that regard. But I think there's no way that it's not part of the conversation. That's a really good question. Okay, let's see what else we got here. And one or two more here. Oh, dear. Will we see running backs finally utilize more in the passing game, kind of like the Pats do? Seems like we have the personnel for more dynamic calls. Josh, that's a really good question. I think, for whatever reason, you know, maybe it's because of the talent they've had or the lack of talent in that phase of the game. But even when they've had that talent, it's never really been a big component of McCarthy's offense. And it's something that I've, you know, called for before, I guess you could say. And it's just never been a hallmark of McCarthy's playbook. And that goes back to his days, even when he had Deuce McAllister in New Orleans. Although I think he involved Deuce McAllister a little more than he probably does the guys here in Green Bay. But yeah, for whatever reason, it's never been a big part of their game. Now, could that change? Absolutely. I mean, you know, Aaron Rodgers did say earlier this year, Mike McCarthy's offense is constantly evolving and changing. And now, you know, most interpreted that as a reaction to the signing of the two tight ends, but it could also mean, you know, something in regards to use of the running back position, especially in the passing game. So, yeah, I mean, guess watch this space, but I would be very surprised if suddenly they became a big part of the passing game. It just hasn't been their MO. But now, like I said, some of that I think is because of the types of backs they've had. But if there is a back on this squad, obviously Ty Montgomery has the wide receiver background, so that lets you, makes you think, yeah, they could utilize him in that regard, especially with a full offseason to game plan for it. The other guy that you want to watch in that regard is Aaron Jones. That kid is a big play waiting to happen. If you can get him in space in the passing game, isolated on a linebacker, I think they could really be cooking with gas. But again, we'll have to wait and see McCarthy on that one. Okay, I'll do one more here, and then I'm going to kick it. I had a couple more here early. As it looks right now, asks Andrew, which rookie or rookies absolutely need to step up right away and make an impact in order for this team to make a Super Bowl run? You know, that's a good question. I just think it's hard to kind of pinpoint one guy because, you know, for every guy that I would maybe say, okay, this guy, it needs to happen, I could also point to a guy from last year's draft class or the draft class before that also need to step up. I'm just going to echo kind of what my colleague Tom Silverstein has posited time and time again, including here on this podcast a couple weeks ago. More than the rookie class, it's the last two classes that need to mature and grow into big-time roles, whether that's Demarius Randall and Quentin Rollins having big-time bounce backs from really bad seasons in 2016, or whether it's Kenny Clark, Dean Lowry, and Kyler Fackrell becoming kind of mainstays on the defensive side of the ball. They really need those guys to step up and produce for them to kind of make a deep run and to improve on the defensive side of the ball. But if you're talking about just this rookie class, I think it's got to be Kevin King. Obviously, the first player taken by the team, he's got to kind of really help in the sense of being a presence on the outside that allows Dom to do a few more things when it comes to applying pressure and getting to the quarterback and or, you know, just calling various coverages and various adjustments to whatever offenses are throwing at them. Because last year, he got caught in so many bad situations because of the personnel on the perimeter, whether it's one point at Josh Hawkins out there or Dimitri Goodson out there or, you know, a hobbled Demarius Randall out there. It's hard to call a defense when you're dealing with that. So I think Kevin King, if he can step in and play well, he doesn't have to play at a Pro Bowl level. He doesn't have to, you know, be an All-Pro there in his first season, but he does need to be competent and he does need to just, you know, kind of bring his athleticism to the game that they were desperately needing at the position last year and never got. So yeah, there you go. How about that? A little Q&A to guys get you guys through the middle of the week. Thanks a lot for listening. Thanks a lot for downloading. Again, if you're in the mood, and I know you are, please go to iTunes and find the podcast, Nagler's Never Right, and leave a nice review. Say something nice, or don't. Say something mean. It's fine. But just leave a review for me, will you? In the meantime, make sure you're checking out PackersNews.com for all the latest. Tons of great stuff up off of yesterday's open practice. We'll have more throughout the week and more into next week and all throughout OTAs and minicamp. Thanks a lot, everyone. I'll talk to you next week here on Nagler's Never Right.